So I want to talk tonight a little bit about dating and marriage. I guess that's the next this is the next topic in our life cycle series. So we touched on it a little bit when we discussed in the very beginning of this series, when we discussed the mitzvah of Pru Revu, which is the mitzvah to have children. So we discussed this a little bit, but and we'll see that it's related, but then obviously we'll go into more depth. So if you look at source number one, it seems that there is a mitzvah to get married, or an obligation to get married. And the Shulchan Aruch says that really the obligation is Chayev Kol Adam Lisa Isha Kedei Lifros Vilirvos. That really the purpose of marriage is to have children. That's really the purpose, that's really the ultimate, I shouldn't say the purpose of marriage, but that's really the ultimate obligation of marriage, is to have children, to bring children into this world, as we discussed a little bit when it comes to the mitzvah of Pru Revu. Now obviously on a hashkafic, you know, philosophical level, the Torah says Lo Tov Hayos HaAdam Levado, that it's not good for man to be alone, right? And therefore, you know, when it came to Adam HaRishon, the Kadosh Baruch Hu created Chava to be with him, and the Pesukim are clear that v'hayu levasar echad, that they're supposed to be one unit, husband and wife, they're supposed to be one unit. And philosophically, there is certainly that element. But in terms of obligation, in terms of a chiyuv or a mitzvah, so then the focus is certainly on bringing children into this world. Now again, if a person can't bring children into the world for whatever reason, so then you still have the mitzvah for the other reasons. You still have the mitzvah for the philosophical reasons of being together, and lo tov hayos ha'adam levado, that it's not good for man or woman to be alone. But again, the focus on the obligation per se is when it comes to having children. Now this obligation is really upon the father, right? It's really upon the father to marry off their children. In fact, the Braisa states explicitly, it's a Mishnah in Kiddushin, but the Braisa states it a little bit more explicitly. The Braisa lists a whole you know, slew of different obligations that a father has, in this case towards his son. We'll talk about his daughter in a minute. But the Braisa says, the Tanu Rabbanan, in source number two, Ha'av Chaya Bivno Lemulo, a father is obligated to give his son a bris milah. V'liftoso, if the son is a firstborn, to give him a pidyon aben. Ulalamdo Torah, the father is obligated to teach his son Torah, and we know that if a person does not have the capability to teach his son Torah, you have to hire a person to teach them, hire a Rebbe, hire a Malamed to teach your son Torah. Ulahasio Isha, says the Braisa, you have to marry off this child. Right? So the father has an obligation to marry off this child. And then finally, Ulalamdo Umnus, to teach the child a trade, or enable the child to learn a trade through which he can support himself and his family. Some say afla hashito b'mayim. That's an interesting addendum, even to swim, which again nowadays we don't really understand that too well. But in those days, when you know much of the travel was by way of sea, and people inevitably would find themselves out at sea at some point. So if you didn't know how to swim, it's not a good situation. If the ship goes down, then you have to know how to swim. Again, nowadays, this was only a yesh omrim. It was only one opinion. but nowadays, obviously, this is not as much of the focus. Although people do like to teach their children how to swim, but it's not as much of the focus.
The Lamda Amonis is not a big focus today either.
I'm sorry?
The Lamda Amonis is not a big focus today either. It's probably a total Z.A.
Okay. So the Gemara in Kiddushin says, what's the source for this obligation to teach to marry off your child? If you look at source number three, this is the Gemara a little bit later in Kiddushin. L'hasio isha menalan. So what's the source? How do we know that we have this obligation to marry off your child? So the pasuk says, "Dichsev kichu nashim veholidu banim." Right, you should take wives for yourselves and have children. Banim uvanos, have children, sons and daughters. Ukichu livnechem nashim. Right, and take wives for your sons. V'yes b'noseichem tenula anashim, and your daughters, you should marry them off to men. So the Gemara says, interestingly, the Gemara says, Bishlama bino biyado. So I understand your son, that's within your capability. Right? It's within your capability to marry off your son. It seems it's interesting. It seems that even in the times of the Gemara, there was something of a shidduch crisis. Right? Your son, that's in your hands. Right? So no problem. You can marry off your son. It's easy. Elabito biyado. Biyado who? He. Right? But when it comes to your daughter, it's not in your hands, meaning the Gemara means that you have to find someone who's going to marry your daughter. So presumably there are a lot of girls out there, right? And so your son is a wanted man, so to speak, and it'll be easier to marry off your son. But your daughter, it's not that easy. It's not even in times of the Gemara, it wasn't that easy. It's not considered biyada. So how can you obligate a father in something that's not really within his control? Right? If it's the son, so we understand it's within your control, that's fine. But if it's the daughter, it's not within your control. So how can you obligate a father to marry off a daughter? So Hachi Ka'amar Luhu, this is how they answer the question. Nitein la midi ulivat vilavshiya unachasya. You have to get her dressed. You have to buy her clothing. Meaning you have to provide for her in a way that people will say, okay, this is a nice, respectable girl, right? She has what she needs. So you have to provide for her. And that way, people will jump to marry her. So that's the father's responsibility. Again, it's not within his control per se, but he's got to provide for her in the way that's in the, two thumbs up. In the way that's within his capabilities. Okay, yeah, that was for you. I put this in there for you. Okay. Now when we talk about question. Yeah, look at that. It's an interesting question. I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, some of these things are clearly only for the sons. Obviously, you know, bris milah and pidyon haben, even limud haTorah, the obligation is only upon, you know, is only for the father to teach his son. So lahasio isha, the Gemara does include daughters. I'm not sure about teaching how to swim. I'm not sure. I don't know. It's probably, hopefully, the husband will take care of her. So I'm not sure there's an obligation for that either. But I'm not sure about swimming. Anyway, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and this is what we mentioned back when we learned the mitzvah of Pru Revu. So the question is, in terms of the age of getting married, we discussed this briefly, if you remember from back then. So how old should a person be when they get married? So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, listing off several different age requirements or age suggestions for different things. So the Mishnah says, Bein Chamesh Shanim LeMikra, you should start learning Tanakh at 5 years old. Bein Eser LeMishnah, start learning Mishnayos at the age of 10. Bein Shlosh Esrei LeMitzvos, we know 13, right, we discussed this when we discussed Bar Mitzvah, 13 years old is the age for mitzvahs, and we know that for girls it's 12. Bein Chamesh Esrei LeTalmud, when it comes to learning Gemara, you begin when you're 15, which again nowadays obviously we don't do. We begin much earlier than that. Yes, I know, right? Zilbermans, they have where they follow this. Mm-hmm. And then Ben Shmones for the Chuppah, 18, time to get married. Right? That's what the Gemara says. 18, it's time to get married. Again, here presumably we're talking about the guys. For the girls, it's even earlier, right? For the girls, it's even earlier, and certainly, in those days, it's much earlier than that. I'm sure many of us have, you know, grandparents. Certainly, if they were grandparents from overseas, you know, people grew up. Certainly, anybody in the Sephardic lands and things like that, you know, the women got married much earlier, right? You know, inevitably. I'm sorry.
3-4 years old.
Well, then that's when they arrange it, but they, inevitably. I'm teaching, you know, I teach girls, and inevitably somebody will tell me, oh yeah, my grandmother got married when she was 16, when she was 17, you know, and she already had children when she was... Yeah, right, exactly.
Five, they were getting married at 14 and 15.
Right, exactly, right. So that's legal nowadays, but at least in America. Right. Yeah, I don't know. But okay, so the Mishnah says the age of 18. Now, the interesting question that many people don't think about, but it's a very, very interesting question. I saw this for the first time in the Chelkas Mechokik. A fascinating question. Chelkas Mechokik is one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch Evan HaEzer. So he asks a very fundamental question. You know, the Mishnah says, Ben Shlosh Esrei LeMitzvos, right? That a child is chayv in mitzvos when he's 13 years old. If, as we began, the purpose of marriage is really a mitzvah. This is not just for fun, right? The purpose of marriage is a mitzvah to do Pru Revu. So why don't we say that at the age of 13, you got to get married? Now, I know that's not socially acceptable, but at least I'm saying theoretically, conceptually, why would the Mishnah identify an age which is significantly later than 13? You're adding on, you're tacking on 5 years, and you're saying 18.
The Mishnah is quantifying. For instance, it says, Ben Chamesh Esrei le Talmud, right?
Okay.
If you're obligated in the mitzvah, there's a mitzvah of Lima Torah. It's quantifying by saying that, no, there are certain parts of the Torah he can learn at this age, and certain parts of the Torah that he's going to need maturity. So, you know, the same thing with getting married.
You're assuming marriage, you need maturity.
Right.
So right. Okay. That's an assumption.
Recognizes yeah. that there's some sort of, you know.
Okay. 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 All right. Okay. Okay. Interesting. Required. Interesting. So when it comes to Talmud Torah, the interesting thing when it comes to Talmud Torah, so a person is chayiv to study Torah. You're not chayiv to study Gemara. Meaning, let's say you have a person who he doesn't have a yeshiva education, and nowadays we have art scrolls and everything like that. But let's say 100 years ago there was no art scroll, so you didn't have a yeshiva education, you were stuck, you didn't learn Gemara. Now you can learn Tanakh and you can learn Mishnayos. You're still Makai in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah,
right?
Meaning, but here it's all or nothing. Here, if you don't get married, that's it, right? It's not the same thing. You're there already at the age of 5. You could be Makai in the mitzvah. Again, a child on his level of chinuch, he could be Makai in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. But I hear what you're saying. So what Shlomi is suggesting is that even though a child might be chayiv in mitzvos at the age of 13. But what we're saying is that there's a certain maturity that's necessary, and therefore Chazal said you should not get married at 13, you should postpone until 18, where presumably you'll have some degree of maturity. For Beis and Shal Shamata, right.
But he's considered an
adult. Right.
So we say because he still doesn't have the wisdom to make the correct choice, especially when it comes to something that may require a Misa's basis.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. The Chalkas Mechokek has a different approach, but he says something very interesting, a little bit of a more practical approach. But the Chalkas Mechokek in source number 5 writes, he says, the Afal Gav, the Kol HaMitzvos Chayev L'Kayim Miyad Kishanase Ben Yud Gimel, even though all mitzvahs you're obligated to do immediately when you turn 13. Mikol makom, mitzvahs ukiblu chazal sheben yurches l'chupa. This mitzvah they accepted, chazal knew, 18. Why? Me'achar shetzarech lilmod kodem sheyisa isha. This is very practically. A child has to learn before he gets married. Right? A child has to learn a significant amount of Torah before he gets married. Okay, as he says in Shulchan Aruch Yerodeh, and we'll see a little bit about this. And Haschalas Limud Gemara, whom you ben Tesvav Yelach. So if the Mishnah says you don't start learning Gemara until you're 15, so what's going to happen if a kid gets married at 13? Right, besides for the maturity, but what's going to happen if a kid gets married at 13? He's never really going to be able to learn Gemara well, right? Because once you're married, you have all sorts of other obligations and all sorts of other responsibilities, so you're not really going to be able to learn. So therefore, you got to learn first.
18, 17, 19.
It's a good question.
You know,
so here you get a good start. You get 3 years. But you could ask the same question about maturity. You know, so who says what age? So 18 was the time the Chazal estimated. I hear what you're saying.
Ask everyone in this room if anyone has a child who they think was ready to get married at 18.
Well, times have changed. Also, times have changed. It used to be people were, by 18, they were already working, they were already out in the world, they were already, doing things, and not anymore. Okay, so the Gemara in Kiddushin, a fascinating Gemara in Kiddushin, those who've learned Kiddushin, I'm sure you remember this Gemara, but it's a fascinating Gemara in Kiddushin that deals with this age of, what exactly is the best age to get married. And again, this is from the boy's perspective. From the girl, it's not really discussed, but it's assumed that as soon as she's ready, certainly from the girl's perspective, where she doesn't have this consideration of the obligation to study Torah, so therefore you don't have that pressure. So as soon as she's ready, right, mature, as soon as she's ready, she can get married. The Gemara says in Kiddushin, in source number 6, Rav Huna l'tamei d'yamar ben esrim shana v'lonasa isha kol yomav ba'aveira. Very strong language. He says if you're 20 years old, and you're not married, right? You're living a life of sin. You're living a life of Aveira. Ba'aveira salkadaitach. So the Gemara says to you, seriously? Right? What are you talking about? You're telling me that someone who's 20 years old and they're not married, that every day they're living a life of Aveira? What is that supposed to mean? Ela'ema kol yama behira Aveira. No, it doesn't mean actual Aveira. It doesn't mean that you're actually doing an Aveira when you're 20 years old, but it means you have to deal with your Yetzer Hara. So you have to deal with your Yetzer Hara. You're going to be thinking about Aveira. So that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about actually doing an Aveira, that you're living a life of Aveira. But it's going to be a big struggle for you dealing with your Yetzer Hara if you're not married. Amar Rav Avachintana Debe Rabbi Yishmael. Archav Shana. Listen to this. Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu Metzape La'odo Masa Yisa Isha. Until a person's 20 years old, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sits and waits. And he waits. When's this guy going to get married? When's he going to get married? He's sitting and waiting, counting the days. When's he going to get married? Once the person reaches age 20 and is not married, Omer teipachatz mosav, right, which is a very strong language, like his bones should roll. Kadosh Baruch Hu is very upset, right? That's the idea that's being communicated here when the person is not married by the time that they're 20. So listen to this. Rav Chista says, "Hai da'adif na mechavroi." He says, "I'm better than all my friends. Why am I better than all my friends? Tinesivna b'shitzer. I got married at 16." Right, so I'm better than all my friends because I got married at 16. We have an asivna be'arveisar, and if I got married at 14, have amina l'satan gira be'einach. I would have been able to say to the satan, an arrow in your eye, meaning you have no control over me. the satan, the yetzer hara, you have no control over me because I got married when I was 14. Amale Rava Rav Nosson Barami Adiyada Chaltzavare Debrich. Very, this is a fascinating Gemara from a psychological perspective, this part of the Gemara. He says like this. So this is Rava says to Rav Nosson Barami Adiyada Chaltzavare Debrich. As long as your hand is still on your son's neck, meaning as long as you still have some influence on your son's life, may shitzar viat esrim vetarte. That's from 16 to 22. Right? After 22, forget it. He's his own man. He doesn't care what you have to say. From 16 to 22, right, you'll have some control, some influence still over your son's life. You got to get him married. The Amri law, some say, no, it's mitam neisre ad esrim v'arba. Some say it's from 18 to 24. Okay? So again, it's a similar idea. Kitanoi, this is the same machlokas tanoim in terms of when to marry off your son, when to ensure he's married by, as chanoch lanar api darko, that you have to educate your child according to his derech, according to his way. Rav Yehuda, Rav Nechemya. What's the time frame of this education? Chad amr mishitzav yadosim v'tartin. Some say that this chanoch lanar api darko is from 16 to 22. V'chad amr mitam neisrei yadosim v'arba. Okay, so it's a machlokas. What the later bracket is, either it's 22 or 24, but you see something fascinating from this, you know, from a psychological perspective, that the Gemara already recognizes that, you know, when a child is, let's say, an early teen, so, you know, I mean, again, nowadays things might have changed a little bit, but at least in the time for the Gemara, the child is an early teen, so they're young, they're immature, they're not thinking for themselves too much, you know, they're going to do whatever you say, they're going to do whatever you recommend, you still exert an incredible amount of influence, right? They're almost like not their own person. And then there's a transition stage. The Gemara is identifying the transition stage. There's a transition stage where they're beginning to grow. They're beginning to grow into their own person. They're beginning to think for themselves, but you still exert a significant amount of influence. And that's from this, either from 16 to 22 or 18 to 24. Once they hit a certain age, forget it. Once they hit a certain age, they're their own person, they're thinking for themselves, and you don't have, it's not yodach atzavarei debrich anymore. It's not your hand on their neck. You might be able to make suggestions, you might be able to give your opinion, but you see in their eyes already that they're thinking for themselves, and you know your opinion only has a certain amount of worth and validity. But already in the times of the Gemara, again, you know, I imagine that in today's society that age bracket may have shifted dramatically, dramatically lower in terms of, you know, when children begin to think for themselves and be their own person and decide, okay, mom and dad, thanks very much for the advice, but no thanks. But it's a fascinating Gemara. But what we see is that obviously there is a concern, certainly more from the boys' perspective, that you have to deal with a certain degree of Yetzer Hara, something that the girls don't have to deal with as much, but the boys have to deal with their Yetzer Hara, and therefore it's not such a great idea to schlep things on too long, because otherwise you're just going to have problems, you're going to have complications. So this way you'll get married at a nice young age, according to the Gemara, and that way you'll be fine. Now again, obviously this all depends on time and place. There's not one posek out there alive today who says that, the Gemara in Kiddushin says 14. So boys should get married at 14. There's no such thing. Nobody says that anymore, because everybody recognizes, every rabbi recognizes that times have changed and the world has changed, and therefore people are not ready. People are not mature. They're not ready to get married at 14 or at 16 or even at 18 the way that they once were. Again, in some communities, maybe they still do, and that works for that community. But in other communities, it doesn't. Interestingly, I'm not sure if you've seen this, but there's a certain organization that has been putting out ads, and they have certain rabbinical endorsements where they're trying actively to lower the age when boys begin dating and get married. Okay, why? Because they believe firmly that, and there's a whole math. I've heard a whole math presentation about this. They believe firmly that the shidduch crisis is really caused by the fact that boys are dating and getting married later than girls, because the population increases with every generation, every year.
They're dating younger girls.
I myself am a little bit guilty of this, right? My wife is almost six years my junior. I'm sorry.
It was always going on.
That was always going on. Yeah, I guess it's more dramatic when you're dating even later. I don't know. Yeah. Right, so I've seen that also. Right. But there is an organization. I'm sorry?
It's not bad for a job on the side.
Yeah. there is an organization that's trying to encourage, again, in the yeshiva community, you know, in the yeshiva community, boys, let's say, will start dating, you know, seriously to get married. 22 is like the youngest, you know, 23, 24 is like the older bracket. You know, that's when people are starting. They're trying to push it down to 21. They're trying to say, you know, boys 21, if he's ready, not every boy's ready at 21, but a 21-year-old guy, if he's ready, then, you know, you ship him off. Get him ready, and let's start the process. And they're hoping that will help the situation. Again, it's hard to know exactly, but it's interesting that they are trying to move that. But you have to take society into serious consideration. In terms of the study of Torah, you know, variable. So this is very interesting because the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins this, and he says in source number 7, Yilmod Adam Torah ve'achar kach yisa isha. A person should learn first. Right, and this is what the Chalkas Mechokik was saying, that this is why we delay until 18, and nowadays we delay even longer. But you say you got to learn first. You got to learn Torah first. Right? Why? Shim yisa isha tchila yev shalo lasok batorah me'acha sherechayim b'tzavara. Because once you're married, you can't learn Torah the way that you once did. You can't learn anymore. Why? Rechayim b'tzavara. The mill is around your neck. What is rechayim b'tzavara? You got to put food on the table. Right? You got to pay the bills. So if you got to pay the bills, then you're not going to be able to spend the same amount of time quantitatively or qualitatively the same amount of time in the study of Torah. I remember I once heard from Rabbi Friend. He said that he said this was when I was in yeshiva. He gave a drush, right? It was actually right before Shavuos, and he said he was talking about the Talmud Torah. And he said if you look at the language of the Rambam writes that each and every person, each and every Jew, each male, right, is obligated to study Torah. Okay, and he says, even, you know, whether a person is rich, whether a person is poor, and he says, afilu bal isha ubanim, right? The final case of the Rambam, where he says that even this person has to study Torah. He says even a person who's married and has children, even that guy's got to study Torah, right? So Rabbi Fran said, you see from the order of the Rambam that he saves this for last. He said it's very clear that the Rambam was aware that marriage and having a family is, you know, in a sense, is one of the impediments to the study of Torah. Not in a bad way, in a very good way, right? You're dealing with wonderful things, and you're married, and you have children, and it's a great thing. But in terms of the actual, right, study of Torah, your responsibilities are elsewhere, and you're not going to have the same quantity and the same quality of the study of Torah that you once had in your younger years, when you had, you know, no worries and no responsibilities. So that's why the Gemara said, that's why the Shulchan Aruch paskins, based on the Gemara, they really got to learn first. However, says the Shulchan Aruch, v'im iyav shalo b'lo isha, let's say a person knows he's got to get married. I got to get married, right? Enough of this. I got to get married. I'm gone. I'm bugging out, right? That's the language of the single guys. I'm bugging out, and I got to get married. B'mnei sheyitzro misgaber alav, his yetzer hara is too hard for him. Yisa isha tchila. So then the Gemara, then the Shulchan Aruch says, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So if you're the type of person that you have to get married, so you got to get married, and that's it. And you know, you'll make the best of it. You'll learn afterwards as much as you can. The Gra mentions, interestingly, he says this is all assuming that you have to work. But let's say a person comes from a very, very wealthy family, okay, and he's got a job lined up in the family business, and his father's taking care of him, and there's nothing to worry about, and he's got a trust fund set up and everything like that. Everything is okay, right? So then, you know, get married first, right? You have nothing to worry about. Get married first. Ratzalomar davka ki aygavna, right? So says the Gra that when should he learn Torah and then get married? Specifically, when he's got to work when he gets married, right? Mashen ki nimein tzarech litrovach. But if you have a situation where even once the guy gets married, he's not going to have to work, so then that's it, right? You know, there's no question. Then you should get married and then study Torah, right? If you don't have to work, then there's no problem to study Torah after you're married. In fact, you know, some say after you're married, there's more of a yishuv hadas. You know, a person can learn more benachas. Again, assuming that they don't have to worry about the financials. But that's what the Gra mentions. Again, that's not the norm. Most people, when they do get married, they have to start thinking about their parnasa. But certainly in a case where not, so then this wouldn't apply. Okay, the question always is raised, a very interesting question. What happens if you have siblings? You know, does a younger sibling have to wait for the older sibling to get married before they get married? Right? So sometimes you have this. Sometimes you have the older sibling is dating or whatever, and you know, they're not getting married, and the younger one, you know, wants to get going. Do they have to wait for the older sibling? So it's a very interesting Bach, quoted by the Shach. So the Shach was one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. The Bach was one of the commentaries on the Tur. So if you look at source number 9, the Shach quotes this Bach, and he writes, Kosav HaBach, Nire Dehai Shel Nisuim Hachi Perusho. He's you know, discussing a particular line in the Shulchan Aruch. Im Achim O Achayos Yasu Lahem Nisuim, right, if you have a brother or sister that's getting married, Afal Gav She'echad Godo Mechaveiro Bechachma, Lo Yakdimu La'asos Nisuim L'Katan B'Shanim, Mipnei Shu Godo Bechachma, Ela Yakdimu La'asos Nisuim L'Godo B'Shanim. Right? So says the Bach, you should marry off the older child first and not the younger child. Ah, what if the younger child is smarter, is sharper, whatever the case might be? Not a good excuse. Not a good reason, says the Bach. Older one should get married first. Okay? So now, so comes Rav Moshe Feinstein. Good. Comes Rav Moshe Feinstein and wonders exactly this question that Shlomi is asking. What's going on over here? If you turn the page, I think you got to turn it upside down. I didn't make these copies, but you got to turn it upside down. But it's source number 10. So Rav Moshe says, well, what's going on over here? Right? What do you mean? Once if you have the opportunity to get married, so how do you just pass that up? Right? So writes Rav Moshe, Pashut. Hinei Pashut Anias Daiti. The af lechatchila yachol acht sa'ir lisa isha. He says even lechatchila a younger sibling can get married first. Af she'achiv agadol lo nizdamin lo adayin isha lisa. Even though the older son has not yet found a wife, right? You have two brothers. The older one's dating, has not found a person to marry yet. The younger one found somebody. Gezuntrei, get married. Ki arei hu mechuyev lisa isha. The younger one is chayiv to get married. Right, so just because my older brother is not fulfilling his obligation yet, because he hasn't found the right person, so why is that a heter for me not to fulfill my obligation? Right, so says Rav Moshe, it's obvious to me that if the younger guy is ready to get married, he should get married. Right, he should get married. You don't have to wait for your older sibling, right, to get married first. Well, what's that all about? Right.
What happens, he wants to marry Rachel, right? So when he finds out that he marries Leah, he comes to love him with a time and love. Over here, Almond is not to marry the young one before the old one. Right? So it's the Yaakov.
But you see, Yaakov didn't care about that.
Yaakov didn't.
He was ready to marry the younger one.
Right. Obviously.
Interesting, right? Interesting proof. V'yav shema she'ena makayim u'mitzad ha'ones, shalom nizdam na ha'ogenes lo. And he says, even though it's not the older brother's fault, he hasn't found the right person yet. It's not his problem, it's not his fault, he's not doing anything wrong. He says, so the younger brother is supposed to wait indefinitely until the older brother finds his shidduch? Who knows? Maybe the older brother is going to take 5 years. Right? The younger brother wants to get married. So why should he wait around? And he says, what about the Bach? Right? This is great. Rav Moshe says, you know, I've seen some authors. Right, and they quote this shach that we just read. Right, they quote this shach that the younger sibling can't get married first. Hu ta'us gamor, says Rav Moshe. It's a complete mistake. It's a complete mistake that these svarim wrote this in the name of the Bach. It's a complete mistake. Okay, why is it a mistake? Shashach b'shem abach airu b'she'omdim shnei ha'achim la'asos nisuim. He says, what's the case of the Bach? The case of the Bach is that they're both engaged. If they're both engaged and they're both ready to get married now, so now you should marry off the older son first, or the older daughter first, and then the younger one, right? Shekvar nishtadchu shnehem v'anidun hu rak le'inyin kavod eze nisuin yasu tchila. It's a kavod issue. They're both omei to get married, they're both going to get married, so which wedding should you make first? You make the wedding for the older sibling first, that's the kavod, right? Shemechadshin and even though the younger son might be greater, might be wiser, smarter, doesn't matter, right? The kavod goes to the older child gets married first. But that's assuming that they're both ready to get married. They're both engaged, right? He says the whole concept of being machabe, the older child, the older sibling, that's only when it comes to we're both ready to get married. Now the question is who should go first? So that's a kavod issue. Right? He says it's not, if one of them is not ready to get married because they haven't found the right person yet, there's no kavod issue. Right? You're not being mechabit someone, they can't get married. It's not the right time to get married for them. So that's it. So that's very clear from Rav Moshe that this whole discussion is only if they're both engaged. If they're both engaged, there is a reason, according to the Bach, to marry off the older child first. That's a cover for the older child, right? But if they're not both engaged, and they're just both dating, and the younger one happens to find their basheret before the older one, so be it. That's it. It's their time. Okay, yeah.
Does Rav Moshe differentiate between men and women?
I don't believe so. And I think, honestly, I think if the issue is an issue of kavod, I don't think it really matters if we're talking about girls or boys. Because either way, there's an issue of kavod that the older sister or the older brother should have kedima, should have first dibs, so to speak, if they're both ready to get married. This happens sometimes. You know, Baruch Hashem, sometimes, you know, when it rains, it pours, and the families make a couple weddings together. But my sister-in-law and brother-in-law got married 2 weeks apart from each other. So there was the same thing. Oh, Baruch Hashem. So it's, you know, Simchas. Right? Offer of Sheva Brachas, offer of Sheva Brachas. Baruch Hashem. Right? Yeah, it's pretty wild, but it happens. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Simchas. We should have a lot of Simchas like that. Okay. Just in terms of some of the things to look for. Very interesting. Some of the things to look for in a spouse. So it's interesting. I think I heard what you said, but. Well, we will talk about that if that's what you said. Okay, so so when it comes to it's interesting most of the discussion is focused on finding a wife, right? What to look for in a wife? It seems that what to look for in a husband is pretty obvious. The guy should be a frum guy, and he learns, and he davens, and that's it. He's a frum guy, but the real focus is on the wife who, let's say, doesn't have that framework of the learning and the davening. So how do I decide what's important? Now, it's interesting. The Gemara in Ksuvos quotes the pasuk that we say whenever we lane. We say the pasuk, "V'atem advekim Hashem Elokeichem chayim kulchem ayom," right? That you are the ones that are clinging to Hashem, your God, which is your source of life. Today, each and every day. Asks the Gemara the obvious question: "V'chiyav shel dvuke b'shchina." What does that mean to cling to God? How do I cling to God? God is like a fire, right? I can't cling to God. God is awesome. God is incredible. I'm a lowly human being. How am I supposed to cling to God? So says the Gemara. So the Gemara says, and here we're talking about, so here it's someone who's marrying off his daughter. So anyone who marries off his daughter to a Talmid Chacham, or the Ha'osa Prakmatia L'Talmid Chachamim, or, you know, you do business with a Talmid Chacham, right? You do business with a Talmid Chacham, give them parnasa. Or v'hamahane Talmid Chachamim in a chasav, or a person who takes care of Talmid Chachamim with his own means, with his own assets. Ma'alala v'kasuv ki'ilu medabek v'shchina. So that person, it's like you're clinging to the Shechina, meaning if you cling to the Talmid Chachamim, if you're clinging to the people who represent the Shechina, represent Hashem, so then that's like medabek v'shchina. So you see here that we're talking about Amasi Bita L'Talmid Chacham. So here a person's marrying off his daughter. So one of the things to look for is a Talmid Chacham, is a son who's Talmid Chacham, a boy who's Talmid Chacham. So that's, like I said, that's the framework. The same thing is also stated in the opposite. I thought I put it here. Yeah, so here, it's coming up. If you skip to number 13 for a minute, so there also it mentions la'olam, and this is the Shulchan Aruch talking, la'olam yishtadel adam lisa bas talmid chacham. So here it's the opposite. Here it's from the boy's perspective that the boy should be concerned about marrying the daughter of a talmid chacham, right? The father-in-law should be a talmid chacham, ulahasi bito l'talmid chacham. So there are certainly, right, and if you're marrying off your daughter should marry a Talmud Chacham. So this is certainly one of the considerations. It's interesting because in the world of learning, where people are learning, you know, even after they're married and they're learning in kolo for a few years, so you would think that the people who are most serious about learning would be looking for money. That's what you would think, right? You would think that the people who want to sit and learn for 5 years or 10 years should be looking to marry someone who has a lot of money who can support them for that period of time. You know, because if the father's a Rosh Hashiva or the father's a Rebbe, he can't support them forever. He's not the man of means. So look for the big businessman. You find it's not true. It's very interesting. It's really not true. You know, of course it happens. But very often, you look at the families of the Rosh Hashiva, the Talmid Chachamim, that's not what they're looking for. They're not looking for money. They're looking for other Talmid Chachamim. Right? They're looking for families of serious Torah study. The finances, we'll figure it out. We'll work something out. You know, everybody will pitch in. We'll make it happen so that the kids can learn. But they're not looking for the quick fix of the father-in-law supporting. They're looking for this masi bita l'tamid chacham or marrying a tamid chacham. So it's something that's certainly important.
The girl who's going to support them.
I'm sorry.
They're definitely looking for family.
Oh, you're saying of a daughter who's going to work to support. Listen, unfortunately, in today, you know, I say this unfortunately because I believe that there's something lost with you know, mothers out of the home. But unfortunately today, whether you're learning or you're not learning, you know, sometimes, you know, you have to rely on a double income, you know, today just to make it as a frum Jew, you know. But yeah.
To look for a daughter, you have to look at the family.
Oh, so we'll talk a little bit more about that also. That's coming attractions. We'll talk a little bit about that also. Okay, so we'll talk about the family. So if you look at go back to source number 12 for a minute. So this is the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch already talks about, you know, this is in the context of divorcing a woman, but you see from the context of divorce what's good for marriage, right? You see from the context of divorce what's good for marriage. So the Shulchan Aruch says, Isha ra'a b'day oseha. If you have a woman who's hashkafa, right? Literally, Deo says hashkafa. Hashkafa is not proper. You know, it's not. She's not on the right track. Or v'she'ena tsnua kibinos Yisrael aksheros. Or she does. She's not a tsnua. She's not a woman who's. She's a promiscuous woman. She's not a woman who's a tsnua like the way that Jewish girls, Jewish women are known to be. So then mitzvah legarsha. There's a mitzvah for a person to divorce. You know, if you're married to a woman and you see she's going off and she's promiscuous and she's not living the life of a tsanua, then there's a mitzvah lagarsha. There's a mitzvah to divorce that, you know, that woman. I mean, obviously this is more complicated. This is oversimplified, but you see clearly in terms of midos, in terms of the things that are important. So we're talking about a woman who has her priorities straight, a woman who's a tsanua. Not, and again, tsanua here does not only mean a dress. Right, of course, dress is important and how a woman dresses, but it's also how a woman acts, right? Hatznei aleches, the Pasuk in Micha tells us, tznius is mostly in the context of how a person acts. A person can act with tznius, or a person, you know, can act in a way that's not sanua. it's interesting if you look back at the Shulchan Aruch in source number 13 that we mentioned. So the first thing that he talks about is marrying either your daughter, marrying a Talmid Chacham, or marrying a bas talmid chacham. So writes the Shulchan Aruch. Let's say you couldn't find that lo matza bas talmid chacham. Let's say you couldn't find a bas talmid chacham. Right. So you're dating, guy's dating, you can't find the bas talmid chacham to marry. Yisa bas gedolei hador. Now here gedolei hador does not mean what we call the gadol hador, right? Because you know gadol hador would be above talmid chacham in this case. So what we call here gedolei hador, it means leaders of the generation, right? Leaders, not rabbinic leaders, just regular, even lay leaders, but leaders of the generation. Lo matza bas gedolei hador. You didn't find the daughter of gedolei hador. Yisa bas roshei kinesios. I guess the equivalent would be the shul president, right? So you should marry the daughter of the shul president. You know, something like that. Somebody who's in that type of position. Okay? I'm glad you guys are all here today, you know. Lo matza bas rosh ekenesios. Let's say there's no shul president daughters that are available. Yisa bas gabai tztaka. So then go for the gabai tztaka, the gabai tztaka's daughter. Right? It's also good. Right? Lo matza bas gabai tztaka. Yisa bas melamde tinokos. Right? So a melamed. You get a melamed's daughter. The al yasi bito l'am ha'aretz. But he said, but just don't marry an am ha'aretz. Now that's the one thing we were trying to avoid here. Don't marry an am ha'aretz. Again, am ha'aretz does not here mean somebody who doesn't have a yeshiva education. Am ha'aretz is, you know, we're talking about somebody who's a very low level of society, not exactly what we're looking for our daughters. Okay. Right, not exactly what we're looking for our daughters. But you see that the thread that's running through this, obviously Torah is of prime importance, but after that, you want someone who's dedicated to the tzibur, who's dedicated to the klal, right? Even if a person is not a talmud chacham, a person is not a learned person, you might not be a magid shir, but you're still a person who's dedicated to the klal, who does things for the tzibur. That's something that's crucially important. Okay, we'll skip the rest of this. The Sefer Chassidim says something very interesting, and before we were talking about looking into family members, right? And, you know, nowadays, I mean, they do all sorts of research and background checks and criminal record checks and all sorts of things. But if you look at the Sefer Chassidim, so the Sefer Chassidim writes, Im yikach isha she'acheha ve'ima ro'im ve'enam gomlei chasadim. So he says, let's say a person is dating a woman and the shviger is not good, right? The mother-in-law is just... you know, she's not a good woman. She's really an evil woman, and the brothers are not good people. right? They're not gomlei chasadim, they're bad people. Mistama biyadua shehazera ra. He says there's something wrong in the genes. There's something off in the genes. Okay? Ve'alzelo amar behadei kivshei derachmana lamalach. Okay? Meaning to an extent we say, well, we shouldn't get involved in, you know, thinking about the future. He says that's not what, the, you know, this, you should think about the future in this case. Right? You should think about the future in this case. And if you see that there's something going on in the family, then, you know, you should be suspect. Again, obviously, there are exceptions, right? We know that Rivka was an exception, and Rachel herself was an exception. So you have girls from families that are not the best, that have Lavan and Besuel as family members. And so, of course, there are exceptions. But, you know, sometimes, you know, these kind of things raise red flags. And again, of course, I want to be very clear. We're also not talking about individual cases, right? The Sefer Hasidim is very clear. Sometimes you have a family where, okay, you know, so there's one family member that's, you know, maybe not from, or one family member that's a little different. You know, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about something prevalent that you see, like the whole family is a certain way. You know, that on, you know, when they get together for a Hanukkah party, if not, you know, the regular type of Hanukkah party that we like to have. You know, it's a whole separate thing. So that's what we're talking about. If there's something prevalent in the family that you see something is off with this family as a whole, right? So then, you know, something to be concerned about, something to be aware of. If it's one, you know, well, some, you know, everybody has a challenging child. Everybody has this one kid who's a little different, who's the black sheep, who's off the derech or whatever you may have. That's normal. That's normal part of, you know, raising a family, raising children. You know, nothing is perfect the way that you quite envisioned it. But here, you know, you see a real problem. It's interesting. In a similar way, the Gemara in Bava Basra, in source number 15, says that when a person gets married, tzarech sheyivdok be'acheha, you should check out her brothers. Right? Check out her brothers. And it brings a pasuk. Why? Because Aaron married Elisheva, who was the daughter of Aminadav, who was the brother of, she was the sister of Nachshon. Right? Nachshon ben Aminadav. I mean, he was great. He was the one who jumped into the Yamsuf. So you see, Aaron checked out the brother before he married Elisheva. So that's what the Gemara says. And then the Gemara ends off the Tana Rov Banim Domin La'achi Ha'em. He says that it's interesting. I don't know. You know, the Gemara has this idea that most of a woman's children will be similar to her brothers. Yeah, I don't know. Genetically, I'm not sure if this holds up. But most of a woman's children will be similar to her brothers. So check out the woman's brothers right before you marry her. If she has good brothers. If she doesn't have any brothers, nothing to worry about. But if she has good brothers, so then that's a good reason. That's a good reason to marry her. Okay, now what about marrying for money? And with this, we'll close. Okay, because I know that this is always a topic of interest. So the Gemara in Kiddushin says that if a person actually marries for money, right, a very terrible thing. Says the Gemara in Kiddushin, it's verse number 16. Kol anosi isha l'shum mamo. If you marry a woman for money, havyon lo banim she'ena mehuganim. You're going to have children that are no good. Right, you're going to have children that are not good kids. Okay, it's a terrible thing to marry for money. Shenemar, b'Hashem bagdu kibarim zarim yaladu. Right, you have children who are strangers. So if a person marries for money, it's not it's really a terrible thing. Now the Shulchan Aruch qualifies this, and he says that we're assuming you're marrying only for money, right? Meaning says the Rama in source number 17, kalanosi isha psula mishum mamon. Meaning the girl is not a good girl for you. She's not the right woman for you. But she's got money, right? So you're overlooking all of the important things, and you're just marrying her for money. That's where the problem exists. He says, but if she's a good girl, right? It doesn't hurt that she has money, right? It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt if she has money. So what? No. Again, so we're talking about that the girl's a good girl. It's the right girl for him. Happens to be she also has money, right? Or
maybe he doesn't like her for her. He likes her for
okay, so I hear what you're saying, but there's no mitzvah. Okay, of course you have to be honest with yourself and make sure that you're not being blinded by the money. But at the same time, there's no mitzvah to marry a girl who's poor just because, well, maybe I'm going to be taken by the money and I'm not going to be marrying a good girl. There's a lot of good girls out there who do have money, yeah. Right? There's no reason to avoid them because they have money. And that's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. He says that again, this whole problem that the Gemara says that if a person marries for money, that's if you marry specifically for money and you ignore all the important things. Money should not be on the checklist. That's the idea here that the Gemara and the Ramban and the Aruch HaShulchan are saying. Money should not be on the checklist. Your checklist is she a good girl? Does she have good midos? Is she a tsnua? Is she a frum girl? That's what counts. Now at the end, after you know, you, at the end of the day, if there's money there, there's money there, and it might help you in terms of, right, the Aruch HaShulchan says it could help even in terms of learning or things like that. It's not a bad thing necessarily, but that's not what you should be looking for per se.
So how do those who say or look for the girl's family who's going to support their son in learning for 10 years?
So again, so the assumption,
get away with this?
Good. So the assumption is that's what they're saying is that, listen, we want, you know, the guy wants to learn for a long time, so he needs someone who's going to help support. Now, of course, he's not going to marry the wrong girl because she doesn't have money, right? And sometimes you have people who say that, and they end up marrying someone who doesn't have that much money because they found someone who was the right person. So, but the idea is that, you know, they're focused, that this is something that's important to them, so they want to look for the right girl within that framework. Now, they might not find her. She might not be in that framework, and they might have to look at a different framework. But it's not, again, the point is that if you're overlooking things that are important because of money, that's what the Gemara says. Then that's not a good thing. That's a terrible thing, right? But if you have, if everything else checks out, the girl's a good girl, and she happens to have money, it's not a psul, right? It's not a psul. It's not a pagam in her family just because the family has money. So that's the idea. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight. Mitzvah Hashem. We'll talk next week is Rosh Hashanah. Maybe we'll talk about Inyan and Rosh Hashanah. But after the Yom Tovah, maybe we'll talk about.